So the purpose of putting aluminum oxide mixed with concrete or cement to seal Nathan's power supply is to serve as a foundation for electrostatic transmission of energy between the tree and the device so that this device could receive the signals, the frequency that the tree is collecting from the environment, and protect the tree, I suppose, from whatever is taking place inside of his device so that the tree doesn't get fried. And thinking along those lines, I've always suspected that when the Amon brothers said there was a mineral contained in their system, their power system, that possibly there was some kind of capacitance set up inside the sphere, if not the tubing as well, connected to the spheres. And this makes sense now in light of looking at Nathan Stubblefield, because if it's aluminum oxide now, it's no longer metallic substance, it's an earth substance. And it's putting earth right where it's needed, because now if the spheres, the copper spheres, are considered to be the grounds, the aerial grounds of the mobile power system of the Amon brothers in their EV system, you know, it doesn't mean their system at home was like this, but their mobile system, if it had an earth substance, aluminum oxide, inside the spheres, it would have further facilitated the similarity between that and what I simulated in Byron's Brubaker's hairpin circuit. The two grounds have to have capacitances of low-level capacitance in those ground terminals. And without grounding to the earth, you don't get that. So how do you make it? You have to artificially create it and carry it around with you. And so what I'm suspecting is that if those copper spheres were hollow and before they were connected to the tubing and sealed off, so they had a hole in it, if you put a solution of, let's say salt and an electrode of aluminum wire going into there, and then electrically connected the outside of the sphere, and then connected a weak or a strong, whatever, AC signal to go through there, he could electroplate aluminum to the inside of the sphere, and then, well, I guess it would be DC. Yeah, salt solution with DC, that's right. So it's a positive aluminum electrode, positive electrode. That would be an anode. An anode going into the solution of salt. And so the aluminum will come off the electrode and a plate onto the interior of the copper sphere. Then rinse that out, empty it out, rinse it out, and now put in borax or baking soda. And now put in the same oscillating... Now you do an oscillating. Before it was DC. So now you put in an oscillating current, and that'll cause the aluminum oxide to build up on the surface of the electroplated aluminum covering the interior surface of the copper sphere. So now you drain that out and rinse, and I don't know, possibly rinse it, possibly not. I'm not sure. Drain dry? I don't know. Maybe leave a little moisture, because actually, yeah, probably drain it, but leave the moisture in there, the retaining droplets, and now you seal it off. So what will happen is the air inside will ionize, and it's quite possible that the aluminum oxide deposited on the surface of the electroplated aluminum on the interior surface of the copper sphere is going to break off into very, very fine particles that you wouldn't want to inhale. But on the floating around on the interior of the sphere, and if there's moisture or humidity there to help it float, because that's what smog is, a combination of fog and smoke particles, it'll help the aluminum oxide float around and be miniature capacitors. All those little particles of aluminum oxide will serve as capacitors, because aluminum oxide is a dielectric material. Used in some instances, Sometimes aluminum is used. I'm not sure how they do that. In electrolytic capacitors, they use an aluminum oxide on an aluminum, on the outside of a layer of aluminum, whether it's electroplated aluminum, I don't know, or a film of aluminum, but they use aluminum oxide. So that creates that diodic situation of one-way flow of current in an electrolytic capacitor. So here they'd be doing the same thing, but most importantly, they'd be putting capacitance on the inside of that sphere somehow or another. To get capacitance inside that sphere so that the sphere will truly act as an earth ground and not try to act as an aerial. So that would be an enhancement, possibly, or a requirement, possibly, to get over-unity, because the Hertzian spark transmitter was not an over-unity device. And my trying to use it as one could not do. I could not get it to happen in any substantial sense without fudging to make it happen. So it may be that you can use two aerials that are not grounded as your non-grounded aerial system, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to use those aerials attached to a device that you're hoping will become over unity, because it may not be enough. And so what may be required here is the same thing that, to satisfy the same requirements that I've already set up in my simulation of Byron Brubaker's hairpin circuit, in that the grounds have to be true grounds. They have to have capacitance inside the grounding rod system, part of the subset of the entire circuit. The grounding rod has to be able to have capacitance and not just conductivity. And I just assume the earth would provide it, and maybe it does. But when you're a mobile unit, you don't have the earth to your advantage, so you have to carry it around with you, so you have to structure it inside your grounding apparatus, which would be the interior of those spherical copper spheres that the Amon brothers made use of in their device. So the first time I thought of them four years ago, I didn't know what to think of, because I thought they had to be like a radio tuner and accept or create a frequency in addition to have capacitance inside of them. So I imagined this conductive wire strung along the diameter of the sphere, across the diameter, and is suspended in the middle of that wire, connecting the two ends of it, actually, so it's two pieces of wire, a quartz crystal serving as an oscillator in the middle. And so I thought, well, the string might vibrate, you know, maybe if it got excited, or maybe under tension, it would cause the quartz crystal to oscillate. In any case, it would start putting out frequency signals and send it into down the tube. And then I'd have both a frequency input and capacitance at the same time. But in this case, we don't really need it, because it's getting its frequency from the environment, and maybe the tuner is elsewhere in the system, I don't know. But at the time, that's what I was conjuring in my brain to justify the sphericity, the spheroidal shape of those copper spheres. Why does it have to be like that? Because Hertz didn't use it. He used plates for his two aerials on his spark transmitter device. So why does it have to be a sphere then? I didn't know about Hertz at the time, but I can see now in hindsight that that justifies that line of reasoning. Why a sphere? Well, there's something going on. There's got to be. It's not just a hollow sphere. There's got to be a reason for it to be a sphere. And so this is my justification for that. Maybe they've got capacitance structured to the interior of that sphere somehow or another. Now, whether or not it's air, or whether or not it's a noble gas, or whether or not it's partially vacuated air under low pressure, reduced pressure, because isn't it easier to ionize air when it's reduced pressure? I don't know. I think that would be the case, wouldn't it? Or is it easier when it's under pressure? See, that's the other thing. Is it under pressure or is it vacuous pressure? So I've always wondered whether or not those copper spheres are a variation on vacuum tube technology, one way or another, their own special customized version of a vacuum tube, or the opposite. In fact, Byron Brubaker is convinced that the Pierce-Arrow demonstration of 1931, the only reason why he had Peter Saville along wasn't for the ride and not for the companionship. It was because he needed somebody to pay attention to a gauge on the dashboard while he paid attention to driving. And the gauge was a pressure gauge, according to Byron Brubaker, because he had a capacitor under pressure to increase the equivalent series resistance of that capacitance in order to make, you know, the system operate the way he expected it to operate. And so he wanted to make sure the pressure didn't exceed certain safety maximums, and he had Peter keep his eye on it. It's the only reason why Peter was there. Peter was acting. Peter was never his nephew, obviously. He was just an assistant, a groupie. You know, he just liked to hang out to see if he could steal anything. Meanwhile, his patent attorney was stealing him left and right. So it wasn't just the arson of 1895 in which theft occurred. He had people stealing from him all the time, and it really got on his nerves. He really stressed poor Tesla out very seriously. So he didn't care much for Peter Saville. Mostly he just did his best to tolerate the guy hanging around and put him to good use as much as he could. But that was Byron's consideration of that situation. Why did I bring that up? Oh, okay, because capacitance works differently possibly when it's under pressure versus maybe when it's under pressure, like a vacuum tube capacitor. Tesla did invent the vacuum tube capacitor, and Wikipedia acknowledges that fact. It did not become commercialized until a year before or a year after his death. I forget which one. But if you look up variable capacitors, I think that's the title or the close to the title of the Wikipedia article. I have a shortcut, is.gd/Tesla cap, and that goes right to that subsection of the article where it doesn't say much. It's like two lines, but at least it gives Tesla credit. Anyway.